Om Shanti. So I've got a microphone over here. If anybody has any question or comment or something, then it's probably good if you come up here and speak into the mic so everybody can hear you, and it'll go on the recording. And as you know, you will receive the recording of all this on a stick at the end of all this, yeah? If you put it on your form that you wanted. Yeah? So now, all the things, whatever I told you between 9:30 and 10:30, is only some of the information, but there's so much. And there may be lots of things I left out, but hopefully your questions or comments will stimulate me to remember what I didn't tell you, so that would be good. So, is there anybody who has anything they would like to kick this off with?
Om Shanti. As you said that we have a birth from 1 to 84. So, a human being, when it is born as a human being, so after the death, even if he's doing the bad karma or a bad effect, will become a human being or will have a maybe annual life or any other life?
Okay, thank you. Did everybody hear the question all right? Let me just repeat it for your benefit. I mentioned earlier that we could have in any cycle of karma between 1 and 84 births. And suppose if somebody does a bad karma birth, will they still get born as a human being or might they be born as an animal? So in the study of Raj Yoga that we do here, we say that a human soul is a human soul, and you will always, it's like a seed, you know, if you plant a cabbage seed, you're going to get a cabbage, not a tomato, you know. And so the human soul will, as soon as you plant it in a body, it's a human body, but you can have a dog's life, you know, if you do really bad karma. So, you know, there's lots and lots of different lifestyles, and, you know, you could be beautiful or not. You could be healthy or not. You could be wealthy or not. You could be stupid or intelligent. You know, so each and every part of a human being's life is a result of karma. So, if you want to be beautiful, rich, healthy, have good relations, be intelligent, you know, like everything all in one go, so there is special karma that you can do in this life to ensure you can get that for multiple lives. So that's a pretty good investment. Yeah, you know. So all of this is possible. Yes, you have a question, come over here. Do not touch the camera. That's great.
Om Shanti, and thank you. Do you believe that genetically you have memories of past life and that you inherit karma from others, and that is writing in your DNA, or why you repeat pattern in your line family? Like in my case, my grandmother, my grandmother, my mother, and if I analyze my life, I'm repeating the same patterns that they have repeating.
Do other people have that experience too? Yeah. So, yeah. Now, why do you get born in this family as opposed to that family? So there is something called karmic accounts. And you will get born in the family where you have accounts. So, these patterns that you observe, which you say are in the DNA, so the DNA is part of your body, but not part of your soul. And yet, the soul will be drawn to those parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, brothers, sisters, and whatever, with whom you have an account. And your account may even include health, predisposition. Yeah, my English, sorry. So it's complicated, but from my angle, I wouldn't call it DNA, because it depends on the karma of the soul. So when you die, your body will be left behind and somebody will have to dispose of it, but they will not be able to see where your soul has gone, because it's invisible and it just disappears and it goes to where there is an account. And so it could be, you know, it's a very, very complicated thing, the account of the soul with other souls. You have an account with a particular country, with a religion, with a political system, with particular individuals, schools. It's very complicated. But it is there, yes, definitely. And this is why we're very interested in learning about karma, because we can decide to create like a track of karmic patterns which results in what we want. So a very important piece of homework I would give you is to write down on a very large blank piece of paper, what do I want? And then keep writing. You know, and really, it's pretty easy to write down what you don't want. But the mind doesn't know the difference between yes and no. Have you tried to not think about a green apple? You get a green apple, right? So if you write down what you don't want, you'll probably get it. So don't write that, but really write what you do want. And you have to really think about what you want. And there are layers of it. And if you can identify very clearly what you want, then you can next of all write, what do you have to do karmically to get it? And then do that. Now you get it. It's very simple. It's 1, 2, 3, ABC, easy. But subtle. Yeah, please. Yes, if you come over to the mic, then it'll be one after the other. And you can make a line if you wish, or just jump in. Whatever you feel comfortable.
Thank you for all this information. It is very beautiful, very valuable.
Thank you.
But I still have a question about the big picture, which is the question why, basically why all this drama, why all the karma, and why do we come to play this drama? So
the real,
I think we all have some kind of answers to this question, but would be nice to hear from you, please.
Okay. Thank you. Why are we here? Basically, the answer is because we're here. But the big picture is very, very deep question you're asking. There is a fixed number of souls. You cannot increase or decrease the number of souls. A soul is eternal and immortal. And there was no time when it began, as there will be no time when it ends. So you exist. There was nothing that caused you to exist. You exist. And inside of you is whatever can be manifested through your body in the material world, and it's contained inside you, a little bit like in a computer file, you know. You have your audio, your video, and then the thinking part, and then you have the virtual body, which is actually a real body, but it's similar to a computer game. And this is why computer games exist, to help us to understand this. So there is a sort of very complicated tapestry where all the souls interact with each other over time, and the whole thing makes the big picture called human civilization, which goes through many civilizations, which we call Golden Age, Silver Age, Copper Age, Iron Age. That's the cycle, goes through those periods of time. And some of us start at the beginning, some of us start later on, some of us come at the end. It's, you don't know. The thing to ask yourself is, who am I? And what do I do in this whole thing? And the best way to answer it is, what would you like? Because it seems to me that what you would like, or who you would like to be, unless you're like really cuckoo, is who you really are. I know there's 500 different Cleopatras and all that, but if you really ask yourself the question deeply, who would I like to be in all of this humanity, and really, really look inside yourself, so who am I, who do I want to be, you'll find it's the same thing. And that the ingredients for it are in there. At this time, the souls are very depleted, so we play our spiritually depleted, disempowered, under the shadow of negativity role. But when we are filled with power, no shadow, and we are in our perfection, then we play that way, and then we slowly decline, and then we rapidly rise. So it's a slow decline, rapid rise. And why is, because it is there. It's like, why climb Mount Everest? Because it's there. And whatever is in you, it has to be manifested because it's there. And then when it's finished being manifested, then it collapses into itself until it's time to manifest again. So it's like you breathing in and out through eternity.
Hello, I've heard human beings like to act out of good reasons.
Yeah.
And sometimes when we don't have a good reason, we make them up. And this could sometimes also make us persuade our conscience. What do you think about that?
Well, you see, you have to really ask yourself, what kind... Repeat the question. Okay, the question is, human beings like to act. And maybe we make things up, right? And maybe it's contrary to our conscience. And we justify it. Oh, no, something else. Tell me again.
Yeah. That we as humans act.
We act.
We act. And we like to act out of good reasons.
We like to act out of good reasons.
And if we don't have a good reason...
Then we make one up. If we don't have a good reason, we make it up. Fancy dress parties?
I mean, do we persuade our conscience?
Do we persuade our conscience? You see, this is a very good question. Justification. Justification. Because. I did it because. I had to do it because. All these things are real. You see, when your conscience is dysfunctional, you can sort of override it and push it aside and say, I am the external moral authority here, you just be quiet. This is why I'm, you know, suspicious of them. I've been asked about this, so I had to just correct myself. Toxic conventional morality, that's what I'm against. Some morality is okay, but toxic conventional morality isn't. So when you're really following your conscience, it doesn't get persuaded. It'll say, look here, who you think you are? I'm the boss here. Right? And you can argue as much as you want, your conscience will bite. So it's okay. Don't worry. Have faith in yourself. You're a good man. Okay?
So what would be the difference between guidance by conscience and motivation?
What would be the difference between guidance by conscience and motivation? You have to see which one will cost you the most. And when you're guided by your conscience, it will definitely cost you the maximum, but what you get is worth having. The other, you pay a lot, but you get nothing. You don't get anything. You pay, but you don't have any goods. You want a diamond, it's not going to lose its value by that. It's more expensive than the junk you can get for less money. But that's still more money than... It won't keep its value, you know. So it's not worth it. Economic good sense. Thank you. Yes, please.
Om Shanti, and thank you very much for all the stimulating ideas. There's so many things that it's difficult to concentrate on them all. One thing that I have been talking to colleagues, my wife and our leader in Edinburgh, on some of the philosophy of BK that we find difficult to maybe accept and or maybe don't understand fully. One aspect was some of the sort of fixed ideas, and one of the questions at the beginning was about 84 reincarnations. So
yeah.
Why 84? But what you said immediately afterwards was these are ideas, they're not facts.
Mm.
Then again, another thing that you mentioned just now, which again fixed us, was there's a fixed number of souls. So
oh, yeah.
Who knows that, and why is that the case? Is it an idea that's useful to think about, or do people regard it as a fact?
Well, no, it's a very useful idea. I'll just repeat the question, that there are many things that my brother has been discussing about the BK ideas. And one of them is the fixed number of births, I mean maximum of 84. Why 84? Could be 94, doesn't matter really. Because you're not going to track them like that. Be interesting though. But fixed number of souls. You see, it's logical. If you are eternal and immortal, you cannot not be there. Right? Anyone who's eternal and immortal must be there, always. And if you're neither eternal nor immortal, you will not be there. So that's a fixed number of souls. How many are there? Well, at the moment, population of the earth is 7.4 billion or so. So we're getting to a point where there's enough, you know? And so it doesn't really matter how many, but what matters is, for your own self, I exist. It's a very important affirmation. I exist and I am acceptable as I am. And I am made up of good and bad. And that's okay. That's the way it is. You see, toxic conventional morality tells you, take a cosmic scalpel, cut your indivisible soul in half, throw away the bad half in some cosmic waste paper basket. You can't be half a soul. You're indivisible. But you see, this toxic morality doesn't allow for black and white. It doesn't allow for the complete human being, from bright to dark, from good to bad, from full to empty. Whereas what this is saying is, you are complete in yourself, and it's a bad idea to feel bad about yourself at a time when you're weak. because you have a right to be weak, and anyway you will be weak when you're not strong, and once you're weak then you will get strong, and then you'll be strong, and then you will go through time, and that will deplete you because time does that. And as long as you come in a body, you come in a dimension of time and space, which is a depleting type of thing. Energy and motion goes away. And that's the way it is. So, but the toxic conventional morality says, first of all, your soul is eternal except that it's not, which is not true, can't be both. Then it says you have to be perfect, which you are already, but it says you're not because you have imperfections, which is included in your perfection, because perfection is about balance, not about extremes. So it's really just looking at yourself differently and knowing that who you are and what you are is exactly what you should be, and if anybody doesn't like it, it's too bad. You know? I think like that.
Just a follow-up and to that is I can understand the logic and the argument. The other aspect of, say, the number of souls, I would think, why can it not just be infinity? Because the infinity of, or the infinity of the love of God is just, there's no end to it. So why has there to be a fixed number of souls and not just an infinite number?
So you mentioned about human souls. What about other type of identities or energies? We talk about angels, we talk about people coming from other planets. Mm. What's your idea about it?
Well, I'm definitely from another planet. You know? No, but in BK we talk about the angelic stage. So in our practice we are trying to finish off all our karmic debts, accumulate lots of karmic credit, and transcend the limitation of this body and enter into an angelic body. You have your soul, small point of light. You have your body, this thing here, leather bag with warm mud in it. And then you have a subtle body, which is made of a kind of white shadow. And so when the soul is really pure and you enter into that, then they call that angel, otherwise it's ghost. And so there's them as well. And then we think that we souls, human souls, have a karmic account with this planet, not any other planet. And maybe there's some other people somewhere else, but that's okay. And that's how we think.
So the enlightened people, if I can say that soul that is really perfect, so subtle, so pure light, In your understanding, they have a karmic relationship with the earth, and they can support people?
Oh, they have to. That's their duty. Yeah. Yeah, because it's necessary. You know, because, say, I mean, our idea is this. You take all the energy from God, put it in yourself. It's not just for you. You have to distribute it. You become like a channel. And you have to distribute. That's your function. Otherwise, it's not fair. Hi.
Sister Denise, good morning. Thank you very much for this morning, but also for yesterday morning. I really liked your presentation, what you taught us. My question is a little bit related to the bigger picture as well.
Mm.
And I know, I think some of us, and I'm one of them, do not have the knowledge you have, apparently.
Mm.
Maybe one step back. Can you enlighten us on the origin, the basis of the information? Like a brother talked about the 84 souls. You used the word predestined, and so much information. Where does this information, this knowledge, come from? Where does it originate from?
Mm.
Thank you, sister.
So some of you may be familiar with the Bhagavad Gita. So in the Bhagavad Gita, it describes many, many, many of the things that we talk about here. And it also says that this knowledge of the Gita will be given again. And the idea is that there's a time when this information is given, coming from the Supreme Intelligence, is given to humanity, it's used, and then it gets forgotten. And then it gets put in a book in a format that you can learn, but that you can't use. It's rather like pyramids. Who's my pyramid brother? No, not here. Okay, there's one brother who's knowledgeable about pyramids, and he was telling me yesterday that the pyramids have been deactivated because some pieces are missing, and the grid on the earth were messed up, so they couldn't function properly. So in a similar way, this knowledge couldn't function properly. Though most of it is there, but there's a little bit missing. Slow down. Sorry, translators. So then when the time comes, which we think is now, then the same source, the Supreme Soul, comes and tells it again, and then we have to understand it or not, as the case may be. And so that's what we think is going on at this time. So once you have the missing pieces, then you have to rejig your mind and intellect so that it fits, and then you can start to use it, and then you start to do the correct karma, because some missing pieces about karma are there. Some missing pieces about self-identity come there. Some missing pieces about things like, I mean, this 84, that's already been there. They know this word 84, but 84 what? They don't know 84 what. They say there's a cycle of 84, but 84 what? So 84 births for a human being, okay, in a cycle. And that a soul doesn't either become God or become animals or whatever. A human soul is a human soul, but it passes through decline. Most people think that it progresses, but the progress occurs during this one period of time between this end and beginning, Alpha Omega period. So you have to take all the information and then all the spiritual power within one lifetime. So we're trying to do that. Like that. What else? Okay. You know, it's a vast knowledge. And it comes in basic bricks like children have, and then you gradually go to the CAD program by the time you grow up a bit, and you get the architecture of the world. But you have to think about it a lot, and then you throw away what you thought about, and then you think about it differently over a long period of time. But yeah, it's very interesting.
You invited me, so I take the opportunity. Thank you. Predestined. Could you elaborate a little bit on that? Where does that knowledge come from?
That's also, well known in the world, but how to think about it. And so the way we think about it is like this. Okay, you're an eternal immortal soul. You have your script inside you. You don't know what it is, but it's in there. And karma is also about cause and effect. So your last effect is the same as your first cause. So it's a closed circle of cause and effect. And therefore, it stays within a piece that is you. So the whole thing is you. And at present you have this body and you're in this time, so you're performing whatever you perform now. But then you study this so that you can think about it, so that you can understand yourself in totality as far as possible. That's the idea. And then go into your angelic form, which we just heard about, and then you can take the duty to take energy from that Supreme Source and fill it into the elements of nature and the people. Because if you can have direct connection, then that's good. But not everybody can do that. But if you can, then you have duty to fill up everybody else. That's a good duty. Yeah. Thank you.
Om Shanti.
Om Shanti.
So I don't really know how to ask this question because I'm confused about it. But it's just about like self-identity, and I'm just struggling a little bit with like this concept that my physical body is separate. I mean, I agree with that, and then you know the DNA is part of my physical body. But when I'm asking myself who I am, and there's like these certain characteristics and stuff that I associate with who I am. Are all souls the same? Do souls have characteristics? Because I sometimes feel like there's a visitor inside my body, and I feel the more I ask myself who I am, the less I know, the more confused I am.
Yeah, problem. Well, you know, there you are. You know, the camera's pointing at me, but it could be pointing at her. I'm gonna put you on camera. I see, so that the people who watch this, which is you, will see it as well. Okay, so there she is. And she's young, right? You're young. Yeah, and then sometime later you'll become old like me. And then you'll die. And this is your current costume for your current role, which endures for some number of years. And if you don't have any untimely death, then, you know, you'll get old normally, and then you'll die normally, and then you'll take another birth. And then a different character from inside you will say, okay, my turn, you know. And so you've got all these characters, and there'll be sort of a dominant one or two in this birth. And then maybe in another birth you have another guy will be dominant, and then the current one will be a little bit more merged, you see. And when you get a male body, then your masculine thing will come out, you know, and your feminine thing will be a bit merged like that. And so, you know, it's quite difficult to know who you are, because you don't know who you are. It could be anyone. But really, it's deep and subtle. And then you have to create criteria. You know, sometimes people say this expression to you with a finger wag. They say, I know who you are. You know, and what they mean is, I know that you're not okay. You know. And then you have to say, I know very well who I am. Thank you very much. So it's like people try to destabilize your self-respect. So one very important thing in spiritual practice is to really stabilize. I know who I am, I know what my values are, I know what my principles are, and if you don't like it, it's too bad. So you have to be very assertive about that. And one of the reasons I don't like toxic conventional morality is because you get trained to not have faith in yourself, and rather have faith in those external moral authorities who know better who you are. Actually, nobody knows better who you are than you. But, you know, it's some kind of a strange part of civilization that they like to disempower each other, especially children, you know. And then by the time you're 18, you all of a sudden become an adult, and then you have your rights. It's so weird, that idea, but it's, It's in the legal system. So anyway, in this practice, you have to sit with yourself and affirm certain things which are told to us. You know, for example, you are fundamentally pure. You know, what will the external moral authorities say? You are fundamentally flawed and a sinner, and you probably should go to hell, and we will help you not go there. And you have to say, excuse me, I am fundamentally pure, I am creation by God, he's not going to make any mistakes, so go away. Right? And then I am a pure, peaceful, powerful, loveful, blissful soul. That's my base, you know. And then on top of that, I have my performance. You know, I perform this, I perform that, I perform the other. And when I'm weak, I make mistakes. None of your business. It's between me and God. Thank you very much. Go away. So you have to kind of assert yourself. I know it's not a very popular thing to say, but...
Om Shanti, Sister Denise. Actually, I have two questions, if I may.
Yeah, please.
First one is, when actually the soul is entering the body, so I mean, what is the time frame from the passionate moment till soul enters the
the body? If we say, okay, question. The question is, what is the time frame? When does the soul come into a body? You know, when it goes out, when the vital signs go flatline. When it comes in, is, you know, there is an expression, the quickening. Have you heard that word? Yeah, quickening. If you're a midwife, you will know. So when a fetus starts to move, that's the time when the soul enters. And many who are mothers will feel, okay, he is here or she is here, you know. And that's when the mother begins to have a relationship with that soul. And in general, it's about 5 months after conception. So the fetus has to have all the bits. And that's when the fetus decides which sex it's going to be. And up until then, it could go either way. So it's about small like this. And then you become like this. And then out you pop. And off it goes.
Okay, thank you. And the second question is more tactical. So you said that, and I think all of us experience it, that we want to change somebody, right? Now, I agree that there is no sense to change somebody. Nevertheless, if you have relatives or people that are close to your heart and they are doing things that are not good, okay, from my perspective at least, I think you should, and you are obliged to give them a feedback, okay? Not to change them, but to give them a feedback. Now, the question is, can you give us some rule of thumb? You know, what's the time frame, or what is the energy that we should invest in giving feedback till people, you know, notice they should change them, they should change themselves, or you know, what is the energy we should spend on it?
Well, as long as, say, for example, you're a parent and you have a child, you need to give that child structure and love. Because the child needs to know what the rules are. And the rules have to be coherent and consistent. So you have a duty to do that. once you're dealing with people who are already adult, who you're not necessarily responsible for, but you're interacting with, the typical problem is somebody is an addict. And so they're on drugs or alcohol or whatever the thing is. And, you know, it doesn't matter what you do, it's not going to do anything. So there are some setups that you can do which involve, I suppose, a classic intervention is a good way to do that. Do you know what I mean by that? A classic intervention is where you get all the people who are affected by that person, and they have to get that person in the middle of the room, and everybody has to say, without any emotion, when you do this, I feel this. So that the person starts to get it, you see. Because the problem with somebody who's doing bad behavior is they will deny it. and they will say, oh, this other person is much worse than me, that makes me okay. So a lot of people have worked on this, especially in addiction recovery. They have figured out these methods, which are very good. And they don't, not always 100%, but it's good. If it's just one, your word against his, it doesn't work. You need to get everybody involved to say a coherent, consistent message so that eventually the penny drops. And it's not just their word against somebody, it's they're experiencing the impact of their behavior on other people. And then what you also have to do in a classical intervention is you have to tell the person what you want done. So if it's an addict, then what you want is you go to rehabilitation, and then you have a couple of years psychotherapy, and then you do spiritual practice for the rest of your life. And if you are drinking or using, you can't come in this house. And you have to apply what's known as tough love. You see. So you create boundaries, and you have to be very consistent about it and very dispassionate, because once it gets emotional, then, you know, it's a free-for-all. So these are skills that you can learn, and because the world is so messed up, there are people who've done really good research on this, and you can learn it and apply it. But in BK, we have to, first of all, make ourselves very clear about who I am. We have to make ourselves non-dependent on those people. And we have to be really in our power. Because what happens is people, they try and provoke you, right? So you have to be unprovocable. Dispassionate. Like a sphinx. That's important. And you have to also, I think, make it clear what you want. And also the boundaries, you see. So if somebody wants to really behave badly, then somewhere else, not here, you know. And or it might be to do with money or this or that. And they try and get you where you're weak, because they're very good at that. And don't be weak. Something like that. Yeah?
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. So we have just... I'm not sure. Judy, do we finish at 12 or 12:30? Okay, so if unless anybody has any question, we can finish. Is this good? You have one? Yes, please. Okay, last one. And another one. Okay. Okay. Now, if you have questions, we'll carry on.
Om Shanti. Thank you very much.
Can you hold the mic a little closer to your mouth?
Yes, I have two questions, or one in two parts. Imagine I'm a soldier in a company to defend a village, and I have orders to kill the enemies. And option one, I kill them. And option two, I let them kill me, my company, and the villagers. What will be the add-on to my karmic balance? Positive, negative, or neutral?
Okay, first of all, it's a hypothetical question. The question is, I'm a soldier, and I can kill the enemy, or I can let the enemy kill me and the village that I'm with. What will be the karmic consequences? So, number one, it's a hypothetical question, but nevertheless a question that comes up very much in terms of military. So, from the point of view of karma, if you're in the military, you have a duty to protect your country. And not long ago, I've been talking about this stuff to police and military, people who carry weapons for their job. And so usually I tell them, okay, when you have to shoot, make sure that if you have to shoot to kill, you do it in one shot. If you have to shoot to wound, you wound exactly where you plan to wound. Do not be under any kind of emotional anything, but be very dispassionate when you discharge your weapon. Because that's their job. They have to. This is the law of the land. So if you are in the military, you have to. But you don't have to rape. You don't have to pillage. You don't have to torture. There's tons of things that people do because they can. That becomes negative karma. So what I would suggest is if you are in the shooting business, you'd be a very good shot.
Just to understand how to be reflecting on our karmic accounts, what will happen.
This is why I avoid hypothetical questions, because it's better to deal with real things. Yeah.
In the second part, I want to join my Turkish friend before. I'm feeling like very tired and worried about all those cycles, golden age, silver, copper, iron, and it goes on and on again and again. Is there any way out?
Is there any way out? Yeah. Okay. Okay, show me the way to go home, right? Okay, so the question, for in case anybody didn't hear it, is I get terribly tired, golden age, silver age, copper age, iron age, all these cycles, can I get out? Yeah, you can, but at some point you have to come. So you decide. The wonderful thing is that when you are not on the earth in a body, you are out of time. So if you are out of time for a billion years or 1 second, the duration is the same from an experiential point of view. So that being the case, it's enough rest. So, I mean, another way to look at it is just go inside to yourself and ask yourself, if I have to take birth, do I want just one birth? Is that enough? Yes? And one is enough? Or you want a few more? Too much? Well, you're here, so that's it, you know. Once you're here, you've got to come back. So, but it's a very good thing to just ask yourself, you know, how much time do you want to spend on the planet? Do you want to miss any of history? You know, because it's pretty interesting to be there at the time, you know what I mean? I would say, this is my view of things. But you can go to Nirvana, which is very nice, light, peaceful, quiet. And you can stay there for a long, long time. And then you come down for a quick dip on the earth and go back again. That's also okay. Yeah, you could do that. Please. Okay, this will be our last question. Huh?
So the BK is another organization put a lot of energy to bring light in our world, to bring knowledge towards who we really are.
Are we trying? We're
trying.
Yeah.
At the same time, there is a lot of other kind of energy that takes power away, as you just mentioned, this morale, whatever. So my question is, what about this, if I can call black energy or devil? Is there devil? Is there a purpose about trying to bring down the souls?
Well, I mean, you know, the question is, we're trying to bring in all this light energy, but then there's all kinds of dark energy, like the dark web, right? You know about that? No? Yes? Well, there is a dark web also. It's got all kinds of dark things on it. All the hackers like it. Anyway, yeah. There is dark energy, very dark energy. And I think that if you are going to be a person who wants to really bring light, then one of the things you have to do is to destroy the dark, and that you have to face it. You have to not be afraid, because it's pretty scary, and you have to face it and make it disappear. And it can be done, but the thing is, there's a lot of dark energy now, a lot, very much. So that means we have to be very assiduous and conscientious to bring in light, to be able to face that down. It takes courage. You have to have courage. On that note. Okay, Judy, you have something to tell us. Oh, you have another question?
Go ahead.
Oh, please, yeah. Yeah, we should finish on a light note, right?
For me, it's quite difficult to get into agreement with the concept of God and spirituality.
Mm.
But I think that I agree with most of the part that we are energy, or there is energy, and the energy doesn't get destroyed or created. It just changes constantly, and they are always there, and it has to flow. It's all changes, and it's all circles. Light is circle, nature is circle. So I can see that from the technical point of view, that we are circle.
Mm.
It's spring, summer, winter. And with the toxic moral that you said, basically all the religion, like in the year sign, like Baba or Jesus or Mohammed or whatever, the beginning of this issue is exactly the same. The message is exactly the same. It was only when men or human institutionalize or hierarchize, and they start making the rule.
Mm.
Then, when it got to toxic moral issues,
mm.
and it happened with Christianity, and it happened with Muslim, and it happened with Hindi, and it will happen with BK if we carry on the same pattern.
Yep.
And my question is, why we make some? I mean, why don't pay more attention to the message and not to the person to the messenger or to the institution? I suppose that it's easier to get the message if you have to have a framework. But the problem is they get, like with the time, they get degraded, the message.
Exactly.
And at the end of the day, the purity, when Jesus was with the 12 apostles, I'm sure it was purity and conscience. Mm-hmm. And so I just want to know what you think.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely right. And that most probably all these institutions, including this one, will vaporize. And then we'll be left with just the self. And if you, as an individual, connect and become a conduit, that's good enough, I think. Maybe scary, but I think that's probably what's going to happen. I thought we were going to end on, can you create a nice light note for us to end on?
I think that is a light note. Be the light. Don't be attached to institutions.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, no, be it. Don't get attached to anything. Be the light that you are. Yeah.
Okay, so let's just have a moment of silence.